Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
I mean, what's Pro Football Focus doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
As a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PFL.
Ready to get into it?
Yeah.
All right. So, we're going team by team. I will be very careful with my sling and stuff. Am I going to get sued?
Are we going legal on this?
I like football. I like football season. All the things that go with it.
Welcome in to the PFF NFL podcast. Steve Palazzolo, Sam Monson. We're live on YouTube. It's our Wednesday midweek show. Got a great show lined up, Sam. Going to review a little Monday Night Football, talk about Russ and what's happening with the Broncos. So we'll review a little Broncos Chargers. We got Nick Underhill from New Orleans Football here to preview Thursday Night Football, Saints and Cardinals, and plus your emails and interaction and all that fun stuff.
All right, let's go.
You excited?
Yeah.
Fired up?
Mm-hmm.
Ready to go? Anything you want to say at the top here?
What do Nick Underhill, he's our Saints correspondent, I guess, for this game.
Yeah.
We had somebody, Barrett Warnock, sent us in an email, basically with a long list of suggestions for people to...
Barnett, I believe.
Barnett.
Unless you typed it wrong.
No, you're right. Yeah. Barnett Warnock. Long list of people to try and get as a guest for the Thursday night game this week for the Saints. We ignored them all. Well, no, that's not strictly true. We tried to get one of the names on the list.
Yeah.
Got nothing.
And I also yelled out, hey, let's get Sean Payton. In general.
Yeah, that was the name on the list
yeah.
that we tried and didn't get.
Yeah, Sean's too cool.
Yeah, so we got Nick Underhill instead. But we appreciated that list. That was a very helpful thing. If anyone is out there, upcoming team on Thursday Night Football, email us in suggestions of people we can get on to talk about your team. So NFLpodcasts@pff.com. Those are helpful, even if we ignore them.
Well, I mean, I've said this to you off air. I'm just going to say it out right now. I want for next week for Ravens Bucks, I want Jimmy Seafood. I want to be powered by Jimmy Seafood here.
I don't understand.
Baltimore Legends.
What is the, you want just like a talking lobster? Like what is the, I don't understand.
No, I just want all the sea, I want to eat the seafood.
But who's the guest?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay.
I just want Jimmy's to sponsor next Wednesday's podcast.
Right.
And to supply some crab cakes.
Yeah.
And the other fun stuff that they sent us before.
I mean, I would like.
And we'll promote him and say, hey, Jimmy Seafood, great place to go when you're in Baltimore.
Sure, but we need to talk to somebody.
Oh, yeah, we'll figure out the guest thing later.
Okay.
But Tom Brady could be a good one for the Bucs.
Yes.
Lamar, start with those two.
We still have Tom Brady's cell phone number from that weird ad that he did, right?
Oh, yeah, I'll just text him.
Yeah, I'm sure he picks picks right up for that.
It always works.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway, Jimmy's. Let's start with Jimmy's.
It's good stuff.
More about the food to kick things off here. All right, let's get into Monday Night Football. Chargers 19, Broncos 16.
Yay.
Another exciting Broncos primetime matchup. Broncos move to 2-4 here. Chargers to, they 4-2? Is that right?
Are they 4-2?
I think they're 4-2.
Is that possible?
Yeah. They are. I know it felt bad.
Yeah.
Because they lost back-to-back games. It felt bad. You got smoked by the Chargers, by the Jaguars, but they did move to 4-2.
You have the same record as the Chiefs.
That's right.
Doesn't feel that way.
Doesn't feel like that at all. This particular game, what an absolute mess. I mean, Russell Wilson finishes the game just statistically, 15 of 28 for 188 yards and a touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
Completed his first 10 passes,
yeah.
Sam.
End of the first quarter, we're like, Russ is fixed. This is the best he's looked all year. And then by the end of the game, it's like, no.
Which means his next 18 passes, he went 5 of 18.
Yo.
So that's one. The other part of this was J.C. Jackson, the big high-profile free agent, who I thought might be a good fit for the Chargers, has not been a good fit for the Chargers whatsoever.
No.
And a good fit in the sense that the guy turns the ball over, right? The guy has always been at the heart of so many interceptions. Tough to, you know, maintain. But he had two bad coverage busts in this game, gets benched. And I tweeted this the other night. If you took those out, man, if you just took out the two coverage busts where J.C. Jackson just didn't really screw up, the Broncos averaged 2.4 yards per dropback. Yeah. 2.4 yards per dropback offensively. So it's a mess in Denver right now.
Yeah, it really is. And we talked on the daily, today's daily, right, was about, is Russ cooked? Is he just done? Is this what we're watching here? And we talked about that a lot. And the kind of conclusion is yes. It's not as simple as just, well, Russ is, he's over the hill, he's done. But the confluence of all the things, I think, that are causing this might mean it's practically the same thing. He's not the same player that he used to be athletically, you know, I think. Which, by the way, if I was spending $1 million a year on, like, body recovery the way he's apparently been doing for his entire career, I'd feel pretty freaking cheated that at the age of 33...
You'd want to maintain that.
The body's starting to break down, and over there, Tom Brady at 45 has got a better arm than he's ever had, and okay, he didn't have any athleticism to start with, but he hasn't lost any of it. Like, I'd be looking at that and going, what the hell?
Yeah.
And actually, I'd be firing everybody that works for me and signing up to the TV, buying the TB12 method for whatever it is, $19.99 on Amazon. Like, what is this crap?
Then we have Russ and his people directly texting Ian Rappaport, who copied and pasted.
That's
after the MRI
slander. You don't know that happened.
Oh, that's true. That is slander. Based off other evidence that has been presented to me in the past, I have suspicion that Rap Sheet will generally take the thing that is sent to him through an agent.
Is there a
or
way
management group? Am I going to get sued?
Can I get, like, distanced? You know, can we create some sort of legal divide between, like, down the middle of the table, so that every time he infers somebody's a murderer or slanders, you know, a fine, upstanding journalist, that it's him that gets sued, not me or the podcast?
You're usually the bitter, crotchety one, and you're trying to distance
But I'm very good
yourself.
At keeping it legally on the up and up. Like, right. I'm not going to put anything out there that gets me sued.
All right, we'll just cut that part out, too, just like the thing on Monday.
That's
that
how it works live, yeah.
Yeah. I didn't even hear what... No, forget it. What was the thing that the other guy said that he got in trouble for?
Who? What?
Our guy in the text message chain from yesterday.
Oh, he said... No.
Like, is it bad? Is it like we can't repeat that?
I mean, you could repeat it. It's bad.
Oh, I didn't know that.
No, it was pretty bad.
So Chris and I have had a rough week here.
Yeah.
With things we've said.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Okay, didn't know. I'll let the people decide. Ian Rappaport at Rap Sheet. After the MRI, Russell Wilson is considered day-to-day, source said. It's a real injury, and he's in real pain. But he's pushing to play. The Broncos will continue to evaluate his progress on a short week. Who's the source?
I don't know.
Who sent that?
I don't know.
Russ himself?
Look,
I'm battling through.
I'm not going to...
All I'm saying is...
I don't know.
There have been previous messages out there, per sources, that are like... Like, remember in Derek Carr... It was like nobody took this loss harder than Derek Carr.
Mm.
He's playing injured, but you know what? He'll be back out there for his
source,
teammates.
Derek Carr.
Per source.
Yeah.
So this sounds like who's asking if it's a real injury or if it's in real pain?
I don't think anybody was asking. I just think that if you're going to try and get ahead of this, you know, and you have to put it out there that, hey, it's going bad, but there's a reason for it. You gotta sow the seeds. And you can't just come out and say it, right? We were ridiculing DJ Moore and the Panthers because... You know, the PR guy for the Panthers was like, no, look, when he was struggling to articulate his own quarterback's name, it wasn't that he didn't know it. It was he just forgot how to pronounce it for a minute. You know, that looks silly. So you have to, like, send it out to a journalist.
Well done.
Who'll do it for you.
You see, was it Michael Robinson, right?
Yeah.
The former fullback?
Yep.
But he's Mike Robb. That's what's confusing me. Did you see his little take, former teammate here?
Mutiny?
Well, his was, I think the part that I caught was more about him being like, come on, Russ, like, don't be a robot. Like, don't just go back to the podium and say, we've got to execute better. Just got to execute better. Yeah. Let's ride.
Let's ride.
Like, at some point, show some emotion. God.
Yeah. So I think what is happening.
Former teammates are all turning on Russell Wilson left and right.
I mean, look.
And journalists that we have on here from
And journalists. if all the stuff that's come out recently about him as a sort of, as a brand, you know, as opposed to a person, as a guy who has his own office in the building and has an entourage and all this kind of crap, right? Who knows if any of this is truly accurate or not, but if that's what we're dealing with here, that's not the kind of guy you rally behind, you know? When things are going south, it's not... Like, when we had on Mike Kliss and he was talking about how John Elway was one of the guys, which made sense. I mean, he was, but Peyton Manning was able to do that. Like, Peyton Manning is a funny guy who's relatable, even if he's 15 years older than you and comes from a completely different background. And, like, there's a lot of ways you would be completely unable to relate to Peyton Manning, but he's like, you know, he's a relatable guy. He's funny. He's likable. He would be one of the guys. He's not going to lock himself away in his own office and start scheming, like, how can I make the next million today? Like, if that's what Russ is doing whilst this is all going to hell in a handcart, nobody's going to want to fight for that guy. That's not how teams work. Nobody rallies around that guy, which is what needs to happen right now. But to kind of pull it back to what's actually going wrong and why the Russ thing is a disaster right now, I honestly think we talked about this in the offseason, right? It was so easy for everyone to jump on the narrative of Pete Carroll's a dinosaur and an idiot. He's the guy holding Russell Wilson back. Let Russ cook. All this kind of stuff. But Pete probably had a better understanding of what was going on than the people from the outside did, which is in order for Russell Wilson to play at the kind of level he was playing at, he had to play in a completely different style to other quarterbacks. Because he's 5'11". He's not 6'6", a giant dude who can just scan the pocket all day. He's got to play the way he plays. But in order to do that, you have to change the offense so that that functions. You have to lean into the stuff that he does well. You have to take some of the stuff that he doesn't do well off the table. You don't target the middle of the field as much as other quarterbacks, all these kinds of things. So, number one, he's in an offense that doesn't operate like that, and they're trying to join those two things together, and right now it's not happening. Number two, he's not capable of doing those things anymore. Like, we just talked about how he doesn't look the same physically. That's important because half of his game was running around endlessly evading people and then making a play. If you can't run around and evade people anymore, now you're just getting wrecked. And number three, all this switch for defenses to two high coverages, to, you know, split safety looks, it's to take away the deep shot. That was the thing that Russell Wilson built his offense on, was I'll run around and then I'll drop a bomb to DK Metcalf or Tyler Lockett. And that offsets the last three plays that didn't go anywhere. Now, those aren't on the table.
Is that where the analytics people who are shouting, just let Russ, like, Russ is really efficient throwing the ball historically, therefore let him do it more often?
Yeah.
Is that where they're missing the point just a little bit? Was Russ really in Seattle set up for success? Because they didn't throw a ton. And when they did, it was a lot of play action and over routes and post routes and, you know, the throws that they're high value throws that he's really good at. And it's a good thing to be good at, by the way. This isn't like,
of course,
like if you could throw the ball accurately 40 yards down the field, like that's good. That's being a talented quarterback. But my point is, are those throws not inflating his numbers, but saying like, look, the efficiency is there because he makes these high value throws a lot. Therefore, you know, throw the ball more often. When if you did that, and if you did run more quick game and short stuff and all that, the efficiency goes way down because it's not his strength. It's not his game. All that said, first half of 2020 is the part of Russ's career that looks really weird right now, because that was when he had a 95 PFF grade through eight weeks, was on pace for 70 passing touchdowns, and they were letting him cook, right? They were actually throwing the ball on early downs, and it wasn't just letting him cook. It was like they were running screen game. They were scheming up really good pass plays on early downs, which they had not done throughout the Russell Wilson era. And then something switched. Buffalo game, he was like dropping snaps, throwing the ball into coverage. The three Rams games happened. And since that point, I mentioned on the daily today, he's QB 23, yeah, in passing grade since middle of 2020.
We made the same point with the daily, but think of those teams, you know? The Rams, they were running that Brandon Staley defense back then. The Bills have been running a split safety defense.
They just copycatted. So the rest of the league caught up to that.
Yeah, the teams that he was having a nightmare against back then were the teams that set the blueprint for the current state of defense in today's NFL. So the landscape has changed. This idea of let's just lean into what he does well, which is drop deep bombs down the field, you can't do that anymore because everybody's taking them away. So now you just have a guy desperately struggling and the offense is, in theory, asking him to do all the other things, which he's never been good at or able to do because he isn't 6 foot six. So you just, everything's floundering. And the really bad news for Denver, I messaged Brad Spielberger, you know, our salary cap guru and, you know, part of the R&D team here. What was my message to him initially? What's the first out with Russell Wilson in Denver? You know, they redid his contract after they traded for him. It's a massive all-in kind of commitment for the Broncos on Russell Wilson. You replied with 2026 and then a laugh, you know?
2026.
Yeah. And he's like, 2025 is doable, but it would be miserable. So they're stuck with him, which means, like, all this talk, Nathaniel Hackett, I mean, that seat, he's the fall guy here. When this, if this doesn't turn around, right? And right now, he now has one of the hardest jobs in the NFL on his hand, which is to rewrite an offense that isn't functioning, to mesh with a quarterback that isn't firing, whose best attribute is being taken away actively by defenses in today's NFL. He needs to figure that out in the next 6 weeks, or they can't get rid of Russ. The GM is just in the building and had a great draft and, you know, is generally regarded as one of the best in the
roster.
The roster's
good, man. That's
right, George Payton. Look, so all of these things are good.
That.
Yeah. But what I mean is, if you're gonna change something fundamental by the end of the year, who's left?
Yeah.
It's Hackett. So they like,
but that's twofold, right? It's twofold why Nathaniel Hackett might be on the hot seat already. I'll get to that in 1 second, because got to remind you about our friends over at Symbol. You've heard me talk about them before, but they are revolutionizing the sports betting market by turning it into the stock market. Symbol was a PFF sponsor last year. They're back for this football season. Symbol lets you trade pro and college teams like stocks, and even earn cash dividend payouts when your teams win. Symbol is a peer-to-peer market that took the thrill of sports betting and turned it into the stock market to give fans a new way to speculate on your favorite pro and college teams. So download the Symbol mobile app for iOS by searching S-I-M-B-U-L-L in the App Store. Use the code FOOTBALL to receive a free team stock valued up to $150 upon signing up. Whether you want to invest in an up-and-coming team or the GOAT and Tom Brady, even though they're down to 3-3 right now, or the new top dog, the Buffalo Bills. Symbol allows you to buy and sell team stocks and profit from your sports knowledge. So create a free account, enter code FOOTBALL to get a free stock valued up to $150 and start making money in the stock market for sports. So Nathaniel Hackett, the two reasons why there are issues there is he's an offensive guy and the offense is bad.
Yep.
And presumably you got a really good quarterback. And then the other one, of course, is the game management stuff that just right from the get-go. And even though that hasn't been as much of an issue since weeks one or two.
Yeah, but
it was like an initial, since Urban Meyer, Urban Meyer, they gave up a field goal in the preseason and he was just like, guys, this is it. We just gave up a field goal. It's
the worst thing that's ever happened to me.
Like, there hasn't been, that was like instant, man, he might not be able to handle this job.
Yeah.
But Hackett was just behind him with the in-game decision-making in week one where it's like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
Right? We haven't had too many of those coaching uh-oh moments that early in people's careers.
And every time there's an explanation for what happened, it sounds worse. So, you know, the thing from Monday night was Melvin Gordon found himself sitting on the sideline for basically the entire game. And remember, you go back a few weeks, and it's like Melvin Gordon's playing too much. He's splitting the time with Javonte Williams. What the hell is this? Everybody loves Javonte Williams. Why is Melvin Gordon eating up all these snaps? Then Javonte's not there anymore, and all of a sudden it's Mike Boone and
Latavius Murray.
Murray. So all of a sudden he's getting no snaps, and those two are eating. Latavius Murray, they just signed, and Mike Boone is a cast-off from the Vikings. Like, now what the hell's happening here? And everyone assumes, well, it's because Melvin Gordon's had fumbling issues, you know, and he's being punished essentially by the lack of playing time. And then Hackett comes in, he's like, no, he wasn't being punished. Well, why wasn't he playing?
He was getting the early carries too.
Right.
And it's like, three carries, okay, 8 yards.
If it wasn't a punishment thing for fumbling, which you could argue with, but at least makes sense. There are many coaches that do that. You know, Bill Belichick, if a guy fumbles, the dude's lucky to ever see the field again. So that at least you would understand. It's not outside of the realms of normality. If you come out and say, no, we just missed it, you know? We just didn't notice that our running back was on it. What? That's not helpful.
So the offseason narrative for us in the Broncos was this roster is good. I mean, they've built this roster the last couple of years, and our narrative for a couple of years now was like Drew Lock's not good enough, and Teddy Bridgewater wasn't good enough. They got to go find a quarterback because the defense is good. They've really built a nice secondary. They've invested well. The offensive line is solid, and the playmakers are good. Like, they've got the pieces in place. They're going to lure in Aaron Rodgers. They're going to get a quarterback. Now, all of a sudden, the quarterback plays worse than it was. Well, let's be real here. The quarterback play is worse, certainly, than when Teddy Bridgewater was quarterback.
It's no better.
But even worse than when it was Drew Lock.
Yeah, it's no better than when Drew Lock was the quarterback.
And so that's where, when you talk about like the disconnect in the locker room, I had questions about this Broncos defense without Vic Fangio, but they've been fantastic this year. Because the other side of it, if the Chargers had lost this game, we'd be like, man, Justin Herbert threw the ball 57 times for 238 yards. Yeah. That's 4.2 yards per attempt. I know PFF grade was better than that and whatever. I'm just saying, from a production standpoint, the Chargers passing offense was terrible. This Broncos defense continues to play well, even with injuries. That's where that locker room disconnect, I think, is showing up here. The Broncos defense is playing outstanding ball. And if they just had mid-level offensive performance or close to it, they're 4-2. Like, this thing flips. By the way, the Broncos' two wins are fourth quarter comebacks where they scored 12 points and like 13 points or whatever it was. The offense has just been an absolute disaster in Denver. And they're stuck with Russell Wilson, as you said. So what do you do with that? Because look,
what you can do.
We talked about 33-year-olds, right? You know, 40 is the new 38, and 42 is the new 40. Like, guys are generally playing longer, and the wall that the typical quarterback used to hit seems to be later and later. But Russ has shown signs of his athleticism being down a tick, and if he's injury prone now, like last year's injury was a bit of a fluke, right? Mallet finger. But if he's injury prone, is it a leg injury right now? Is he a little bit slower? Is it a shoulder? That stuff starts to add up, and we're talking,
I mean, he's
4 years out of the big contract.
Minimum, he's entering the zone now where physical things are a potential concern, whether it's losing a step, whether it's losing durability and becoming more injury prone as you age. Like, these are things that happen to people as they progress through their 30s and into their 40s. Now, apparently, people like Tom Brady are just immune to that with all the avocados he eats and all that kind of stuff, right? Aaron Rodgers appears to be fairly immune to that. We are starting to see more and more of these quarterbacks that don't appear to be affected by that stuff. But you don't have to go back that long to find a whole bunch where that's exactly what happened to them. And whether or not it's happening to Russ right now, at the very minimum, this is now something sort of hanging over him as the Broncos are tied to him for the next 2 or 3 years, you know? And that's why, like, this situation in Denver looks terrifying. Like, it's not working. The guy that needs to fix it is maybe the chief source of the problems in Nathaniel Hackett. And they need to get it all fixed in the next few weeks.
All right, man. Do you have anything else to add to this?
No. I mean,
listen to the daily. We rehashed a lot of it, but today's daily, we break down Russ, where he's ranked. And
yeah, I mean, the new piece of information there is that the contract situation and just sort of how screwed Denver is if they got that wrong. Like, you made the massive investment to trade for him in the first place. That was a risk. You then doubled down on it to extend his contract because, I mean, I would assume that the GM sort of works on the basis, well, if we got it wrong, we're all screwed anyway, so what the hell? Like, let's make it better for us long-term financially if and when it works out. But if it didn't work out, you've just made the problem even worse and now everything is screwed. So I'd be, at this point, I'm reaching the stage where I would be surprised if Nathaniel Hackett doesn't, if he makes it to next year.
And then the question is going to be, okay, who's the coach that you're going to match?
Who can fix this?
Yes.
Yeah.
Who are you going to pair Russell Wilson with?
Right.
But just want to reiterate, Broncos defense playing great. Patrick Surtain playing corner at an all-pro level right now. So they have the pieces to get better in Denver, but something has to happen quickly here. Is this an email about the next Geno Smith here?
Yeah.
Why don't we get into this? Because this was Geno Smith tearing it up. He's coming off of a subpar game, but still one of the highest graded quarterbacks in the NFL, having a great season so far.
I'm going to assume that this is another Australian email based off how it begins. It's from a guy called James Sibson. G'day, mates.
Well done.
Since you guys are talking about how Geno has managed to develop a ton over the course of being a backup for years since the unfortunate start to his career, I was wondering who you think might be candidates for a similar type of career path down the road, as in quarterbacks who are starting or have started recently that could be a backup for a while before earning another starting gig and showing great strides in development. His personal pick is Daniel Jones.
Interesting. I mean, does Ryan Tannehill count in that? You don't have like the long... I'm just saying, looking backwards.
Yeah.
Like the sure. guys that we've seen have
maybe
rejuvenated careers, Ryan Tannehill, Geno Smith.
Yeah.
Would you put, I'm going.
Well, we were talking before, the Geno one is almost, I mean, certainly short, recent, unprecedented. Like you have to go right. back a long way to find a guy that was that sort of buried as a career backup for years. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, actually this guy's amazing.
Right. Marcus Mariota's currently an interesting one, just because I don't know that he's playing great, but I think you're seeing his new team tap into his skill set more.
Yes.
Which the Titans maybe didn't do.
But that's very different again to what's happening with Geno, which is, okay, he's in a, it's not.
He just looks
right.
completely
He's
better.
A different guy.
Daniel Jones is an intriguing one.
Daniel Jones I like. I said, I think last year, or at least in the offseason, that strikes me as something that's likely to happen. He's not got enough around him to look great this year. They're probably going to end up moving on because of the situation they'll be in, though, frankly, they're winning a lot of games. Maybe that changes. But he's absolutely the sort of a reclamation project that I'd be very interested in. Like, he's got, a lot like Geno, he's got all the physical tools. He's got the arm. He's got the capacity to push it downfield. Apparently, he's way more athletic than anybody ever gives him credit for. As a rushing threat, like he can do all of that stuff. The stuff where he fails is, you know, his pocket presence isn't great. It's the kind of thing that I think you could learn or develop from the sideline. And maybe in, you know, a few years' time, Daniel Jones is a good starting quarterback.
Man, it's intriguing, right? Because I repeat this a million times, that there are 30-ish starting caliber quarterbacks in the NFL. But as much as you'd like to have a top 10 quarterback, other teams are going to be cycling through that next bunch. Carson Wentz keeps getting these opportunities and hasn't, you know, come good on them necessarily yet. So even if the Giants move on from a Daniel Jones, there's going to be some other team in bridge territory where Daniel Jones is an upgrade.
Yeah.
You know? What about Gardner Minshew?
Gardner Minshew?
Like that guy... He doesn't have the physical tools, right?
Yeah.
He doesn't. It's not like he has this cannon for an arm where it's like, man, if he just understands the offense a little bit better, he'll get there. It's kind of the opposite. He did well throwing the ball down the field despite not having a great arm and all that stuff. But for me, it's tough. It's tough to separate the fact that he had a bad situation in Jacksonville, and he had a situation that we make excuses for quarterbacks all the time, and he went there and did a really good job with not a great receiving core, with not a great offensive line, and he produced. Not enough that you say, okay, he's my guy forever going forward, because it feels like it's a limited upside, but I think Gardner Minshew's interesting through that lens. Or, you know, maybe Justin Fields at the end of this
there you
year
go.
Could
that's,
be the guy.
That's the one I was about to bring up. The guy that jumps to mind for me, Daniel Jones, I think is a good one, and then Justin Fields, because I tweeted something out that got a lot of Bears fans mad. Justin Fields is leading the NFL right now in the percentage of uncatchable throws that he's passed for.
All you did was
29-point-something percent, highest in the NFL by a distance.
He was there last year too. You just a fact out there.
I know. So it's by far the most in the NFL. And then I, you know, send a follow up tweet where it's like, look, nothing Justin Fields does happens in a vacuum. The situation around him stinks. His offensive line's bad. The receivers are bad. It's all bad. There's plenty of blame to go around, but he's a force multiplier for the bad right now. We tend to talk about force multipliers for good, guys that make everything around them better. Justin Fields is making the bad things worse because he's got a lousy pocket presence. He holds onto the ball too long. He doesn't, you know, do the things that a quarterback does to mitigate those things, and it compounds the problems. So there's plenty of blame to go around, but what it means is Chicago looks like they're inevitably heading for a very high draft pick in a quarterback class that's going to have quite a few top quarterbacks in it. And I don't really see how they can get away with not picking one because they have Justin Fields based off what he's done this year. So I think Fields he's being set up to fail. He's failing. And after this year, he's going to be a backup somewhere. Maybe it's Chicago, maybe it's somewhere else. But that's exactly the kind of, like, he's got all the tools. got the arm, he's got athleticism, he's got the ability to make wow plays left, right, and center. And everything about what he's struggling with right now is process driven. It's the kind of thing that I think you can develop sitting in a meeting room, sitting on the sidelines, sitting as the backup, you know, in practice, and over the course of 3, 4, 5 years get better. Maybe Justin Fields in 2026, when Denver gets away from like the Russell Wilson contract, like maybe he winds up getting a gig
somewhere.
Great answer.
That's it. We got Fields to Denver in 2026 to replace Russell Wilson. I mean, it's an interesting one, right? Because we've heard rumblings from teams who are adamant behind closed doors that they want their first round rookies to sit.
Yeah.
Behind closed doors, they say this. Publicly, they say it loosely, like, yeah, we want our guy to sit. And then they feel like their hand is forced to put a guy in or whatever it is. But, like, what would that really look like? And I know it's not as simple as if you look at three of the four best quarterbacks in the NFL right now, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, and Patrick Mahomes. They did literally sit at least 1 year, right? That's not A-B analysis. Or, I mean, that's not like, hey, this is the only way to do it. There's examples the other way. But this is what I say every year. Like, if you truly believe this quarterback needs time, just suck it up and sit him, no matter what happens that season. I'm just curious what would happen, if anything would happen differently, with a Fields, with a Pickett, with anybody that you feel like they need to sit for the year and just absorb and play like week 18, whatever, play one game.
The reason I think that the Geno thing is so hard to repeat and why we can't really think of another good example of it happening for years is that I don't think anybody plans it this way. And the development that we're talking about, I don't think is particularly evident or obvious in practice or in the meeting room.
Yeah.
So you don't know it's there until it happens, right? So Geno Smith essentially was consigned to life as a backup quarterback going forward. After the Jets and the Giants thing crapped out, it's like, well, Geno's just done, but he's a good backup, you know? We'll play him in preseason and blah, 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 but he's our backup quarterback. Nobody then intends making the backup quarterback the starter. It necessitates something going wrong for that to happen, and then, this isn't what we thought was going to happen. This is better. Like, he's changed. He's a different guy.
Look, yeah, he hadn't shown up in the preseason.
Remember, yeah, so it hadn't shown... Well, this preseason.
Previous preseasons.
But the point being, like, in order for this to happen, the Seahawks had to trade away Russell Wilson and then essentially punt on quarterback this year. You know, we're going to have a competition with Geno and Drew Locke, which is effectively whoever wins loses, you know, and the quarterback we're getting is next year. And even then, remember, they were like pushing this up as like, this is neck and neck. This is an even race. It's you know, there's no difference. Could be Geno, could be Drew Locke. And then basically, you know, Drew Locke catches COVID. Geno ends up playing well in the preseason game. It's all right, Geno wins the job. And now the idea that it was like an even competition seems absurd. But that's what needed to happen for Geno to get this opportunity to prove that he was a different guy. For the Daniel Jones of the world or the Justin Fields in the world, like, not only do they need to get the backup job to develop somewhere for years, they then need to get lucky as hell that something happens ahead of them, that they get thrust into the starting gig again to show that that's been the case. That's where it gets tricky.
Yeah, did Seattle just see that? Did they actually see this all in practice with the Geno stuff? Maybe they did.
If they did, they never would have made anything out of the Drew Lock competition. They probably wouldn't have even traded for Drew Lock. Like, it wouldn't have been a thing. They had no idea this was going to happen.
You want to get to some trade candidates here?
Yeah, sure.
Talk through a little bit. Doug Kide over at PFF.com. He's got some...
Cousin Doug,
of course, has some potential trade candidates. But first, quick reminder, the PFF NFL podcast is sponsored by Western and Southern Financial Group. While you focus on your roster moves, Western and Southern helps advance your money moves. Buying your first home, planning to start a family, wondering how to make your money grow. Western and Southern's playbook of life insurance, investment, and retirement solutions helps you rest assured on game day. Team up to understand needs and address goals with a game plan built just for you. Get started at westernsouthern.com/PFF. All right, Doug's got an article, PFF.com. Some of the rumored names to potentially be trade candidates, some that are new, some that are wide open there, but... did you know, I, of course, jokingly suggested jokingly suggested Melvin Gordon for Cam Akers during the game the other night. And had a lot of people say, yeah, that, I mean, Melvin Gordon's been benched and Cam Akers is on his way out with the Rams. And a lot of people said, yes, yeah, whatever. And I was one of Melvin Gordon's likes on Tuesday morning. He went through liking, you know, he did the whole...
Every tweet that mentioned him.
He went through and liked my tweet, among others, that suggested, you know, he's getting screwed and what needs to play. And I felt bad for him. They were putting his... they put a clown emoji on his face and everything on the big screen.
Who?
The Chargers.
Harsh.
Yeah. Me. Like, I've had...
You've experienced that before yourself.
The running back in his draft
NFL
class.
Running backs.
Yeah. I've had the clown face added to me.
Melvin Gordon, I think, has been unfairly criticized for the majority of his career. He's been a better player than people have ever given him credit for. And it seems like almost like half of his career has been spent people complaining that he's playing. Like, why is this guy playing? Why is we not giving playing time to the other dude? Like, he's good. He is a good running back. Okay, he's had fumbling issues this season, but he is a good running back that doesn't... Like, it's not... There are cases where there are running backs who are being dramatically outplayed by the guys behind them, and you're like, why is this dude still getting these snaps, right? That's never been the case for Melvin Gordon, and yet people act like it is all the time. And then you have this situation where apparently his own coach just didn't notice that he wasn't playing. Like, the whole thing, I think, has been unfair to Melvin Gordon. So, yeah, look, if Denver isn't going to use him, why not chip him out?
Straight up for Cam Akers to the Rams? Gordon running for the Rams and Akers to the
I mean, why not?
Broncos?
The Cam Akers thing is kind of weird. Like,
something happened off the field, obviously.
Well, but did it? Or did they just, is this how you try and like bottle it up and not let the, not air your dirty laundry in public? You know, you just say, we're dealing with some things, you know?
I mean, that already sounds like dirty laundry.
I know, but that's not to say that's not how they've decided is the best way of trying to bottle it up and keep a lid on it.
Yeah, I don't know, man. What else you got here? Doug going through here for trade candidates or moves.
So I forget, somebody tweeted recently that Green Bay will make a move for a wide receiver. Like, not should, will try, like, absolutely nail it on. They're going to trade for somebody. And
Green Bay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And obviously, like, Odell Beckham is the kind of available free agent candidate that's always being talked about. But if you're talking about trades, like, the obvious one is calling up Carolina and being like, hey, DJ Moore.
Yeah.
How much, you know? And again, I'm not 100% sold yet that the Panthers are in the midst of a fire sale until they figure out how the next few weeks is going to go.
Yeah.
But if like that, that's absolutely a move that the Packers should try and make if they can.
It's interesting for Carolina too, because they're not, I don't think they're in like a full teardown mode of that roster. Right. But as receivers are becoming a little bit easier to find around the NFL, not a bad move to maybe think about trading a DJ Moore to a desperate team. Like, we're talking a desperate Packers team that might need to save their season, whether it's OBJ in free agency or a trade.
And I'd also like, I'd be thinking about that from a Packers perspective. Like, all right, who knows what the what the trade would cost, but I would be willing to offer one of the rookie receivers that I have as part of that trade. Like, hey, give me DJ Moore, we'll send you something, and one of these guys is part of the make weight. You know, Romeo Doubs or Christian Watson.
Well, not Doubs. I mean, Doubs is... He's not Devontae Adams yet, but he's shown enough that he's still going to be good. Like, Doubs is going to be good.
But you drafted both these guys for a reason.
Traded up to get Watson at 34 overall.
Yeah.
Super fast. Right now, he's just their jet sweep guy. But, man, that's a tough one to sell.
Sure, but it would dramatically, obviously, reduce the costs. The acquisition costs in terms of draft picks to get DJ Moore. And the whole point about getting a DJ Moore is paying for the certainty of what he is at today's NFL, which has been pretty quarterback-proof, by the way. Like, DJ Moore's production relative to the guys throwing him the ball has been pretty damn impressive.
Yeah.
So connecting him up with Aaron Rodgers is potentially season-saving for the Packers. And if it has to cost you one of the two guys that are young and you like and the potential is there, but right now are not doing it for you, so be it.
The New England Patriots potentially trading Kendrick Bourne, guy that's, you know, just hasn't, just fallen down the depth chart really in that area, but on that team. But last year played pretty well, you know, showed a lot of flashes with the 49ers. That feels like more of a Packers type of move. They would trade for a Kendrick Bourne, and he's just another Alan Lazard-ish type of receiver as far as skill level goes, different style. That feels more likely, but it does sound like Green Bay. They have to do something, though.
Yeah.
But Bourne was mentioned in Doug's article, too. One of my favorite players in the NFL to maybe pick up, too, would be Bryce Hall, the cornerback from the New York Jets. The Jets have two top 10 corners as far as wins above replacement goes right now. Sauce Gardner, DJ Reed, both playing really well. Bryce Hall's been the guy that's kind of pushed out there with those two offseason additions through the draft and free agency. But Hall's played some pretty good football throughout his career.
Yeah, I would absolutely be interested in kicking the tires on Bryce Hall if I was a team and needed cornerback help. Another one is William Jackson, who we talked about in the NFL Daily. I would always chase the 2017 version of William Jackson if I was an NFL defense. Like, we know cornerback play coverage generally is volatile. It's fluky. It sort of goes, comes and goes. He's shown a ceiling and a level of play that very few corners in the NFL have ever approached. Now, it is fair to say that his best attribute is man coverage, and the league is moving more and more away from man coverage. So these are things that are, you know, he's kind of suffering, I think, from a similar issue that Russell Wilson is suffering from, which is the league is changing and it's going away from the thing that you're great at. I mean, this is a J.C. Jackson problem potentially as well.
Right.
That being said, if the deal is cheap enough and I have, if my corners stink, I'm all for taking a look at that.
All right, so go check out Doug's article, PFF.com, Rumor Roundup, and Trade Candidates. Also on the PFF app, go check out the app, check out Sam's work, Doug's work, and all of our great writers. Search PFF in the app store, all of our betting, fantasy content there. You can find all the best bets for a given week. PFF app is live right now in the app store. All right, you ready to get into a little explain the grade, Sam? It's another... It's a tense one.
It is.
Again, this week.
Now,
we have an intro?
I believe we've been working on one, but I have yet to get an answer from Tyler as to whether it exists or not for this show. There you go.
I'll have you a low grade for that, but I'll keep it rolling.
We'll probably talk right over it, but there it is.
Yeah.
Perfect. So,
I'm unprofessional, the grade. But we'll do better with that going forward.
Yeah. We've got two particular players for explain the grade. One of them is very talked about. One of them is positive. One of them is negative. Let's start with the positive, because, you know, we're optimism. Optimistic here.
I figured we'd end with the positive.
No.
Okay.
We're going to start with the positive. Let's.
Do you have a written statement prepared for the second part here?
We don't need written statement. I do this on, you know, it's all about the, it's all from the heart, Steve. It's from the heart. Brandon Graham, a PFF grading poster child through his entire career.
Yeah, this could be a career
A guy
award.
That's never, except for that one year you won lunch, got the sack totals that he deserves for his pressure, but has always made an impact. And, you know, for the people that talk about why sacks are important, pressures are nothing, they're almost plays. Well, that's not entirely true. Pressure in itself is important for pass rushers. Pressure generally reduces a quarterback's passer rating by about 30, 35 points, depending on the year. Like, that's the kind of impact it has. So if you get pressure a lot, you are making a material impact on the play all the time. And okay, sometimes they can make plays anyway and a touchdown off the back of it, sure. But over the long season, it's going to end up being a positive in your favor. So, Brandon Graham in this game, only 3 pressures, but his PFF grade was high. I forget what the number is entirely. The reason, for a start, he only had 18 rushes, right? So we're going to pretty low number. Already 3 pressures and 18 pass rushes is pretty good. He had a 4th pressure that was nullified by a coverage penalty, so nothing to do with the pass rush, right? We grade those. He's going to get credit for 4 pressures.
Doesn't even show up in our stat sheet because we just keep the negated
right.
plays out of that.
Exactly. Yep. So he's going to get credit for that 4th rush on top of that. All of his rushes were pretty clean wins. He also had 3 more pass rushing wins that are BD plays, that are pass rushing wins that don't get a chance to become pressure because the ball's out. So now we're up to 7 pass rush wins. That's a win rate of like 40%, which is massive. And all of those, the rushes, the wins themselves have been clean plays. He's the guy that got the hit that created the interception off a play that would have been a deep bomb to CeeDee Lamb, probably a touchdown. It's not a touchdown, it's an interception because of Brandon Graham's hit, the win that he had on that play. So the classic example of, we're giving him credit for those wins that don't necessarily show up on the stat sheet.
There you go, Brandon Graham. How many sacks?
In that game, 0, right?
0. Still very effective, good player.
Yeah.
Brandon Graham's career right there.
In a nutshell, that game honestly was Brandon Graham's career in a nutshell. The perfect example of how a guy can get a good grade, have a massive impact in the game as a pass rusher, but not get any sacks.
All right, Brandon Graham, nailed it.
Ready for the next one?
Yep.
Okay, Quinnen Williams, the most requested explain the grade we have had since we started our explain the grade segment.
Explain yourself.
Well, let's start with an email that gives an example of what we're talking about here. Courtney Harris emailed a long thing, but the important sentence here. I understand that I'm not watching the All-22 game film of every snap, but Quinnen's play on Sunday was, from my perspective, the reincarnation of Warren Sapp in terms of game wreckage play from a defensive tackle. And yet he ends up with an overall grade from us of like 65, and all of Jets fans, all of Jets, what's the equivalent of Jets Mafia, or, you know, Bills Mafia?
Jets Mafia.
Okay, Jets Mafia, yeah. All of them being like, hey, explain yourselves, this is ridiculous. So we went through and checked it out. We're wrong. We got it wrong. Yeah, we got it wrong. Simple as that. We went through after all of the criticism, and we went through and rechecked his grade, essentially, play by play, and we've moved it up to, what is it now, 80 point something?
81.
81.
81.4, and it is the highest grade on the Jets defense for Sunday.
Now, one important part, whether it's the 65 grade or the 80 grade, one of his best plays in that game was a blocked punt,
right?
Which is one of the highest grades we're going to give out for any play of the week, but it's not going to show up in his defense grade, right? And we don't have a sort of an overall all facets grade. That doesn't exist anywhere.
Right.
So there's essentially like a...
So it's an 81 defense grade. Plus, by the way, he blocked a punt where he'll have like a 94 special teams
exactly.
grade for the game that... Like, bake that into your analysis.
So that's the kind of play, everyone remembers that play from the game. You know, huge play in the game, massive impact, and absolutely got credit for that, but that's never going to show up in his defense grade, which is, it's just one of those mental things that you're going to miss on. But, yeah, we got this one wrong. This was a badly reviewed grade by our standards. And when we went through and checked it, we found a few plays that we moved, bumped him up to where he should have been given his impact on the game, which was 7 pressures, 2 sacks, 4 stops, the block punt. And, you know, we can just hold our hands up and say we got this one wrong. And when we get the kind of blowback that we had on that grade, we always go back and check those things. Most of the time, we don't change much, if anything. You know, there's a small play here or there that's debatable, and we end up siding the other way. Most of the time, we don't change them, but we did on this one. It changed significantly, and all we can do is go back and try and improve the process again, introduce more checks and try and figure out a way we can stop it happening again.
Yeah, and, you know, one of those plays that we were looking at, too, I think initially he got credit for a pressure. He's bull rushing the left guard into Aaron Rodgers. Kind of looked like Rodgers just, the ball just slipped out of his hand.
Yeah.
I think Quinnen got credit for a sack by the NFL there. We kind of reviewed it. I think we ended up giving him the sack because of the bull rush into, it was contact with Rodgers that led to the ball coming out of his hand. Even that said, like the 7 pressures are a little, they're most of them were very good. A couple of them were cleanup where he's probably not getting a high grade. So it was actually his run defense that carried his grade. And I know all of his big plays also happened third down, key stops, yep. 3rd and 5, making a huge tackle in the run game. So, yeah, Quinnen Williams was disruptive, run game and pass game, and he also blocked a field goal.
Right, and look, there's a couple of plays in there that are, you know, slightly, I think, less impressive than maybe they looked initially. So his sack on Aaron Rodgers, I think a 3rd and 7 play, where it looks like he absolutely monsters a double team, is in the backfield, makes a great tackle on Aaron Rodgers, and you're like, wow, that's like the highest grade you can get on a play. That's off the charts. But the right guard just goes AWOL in the play. Doesn't even, like, it's supposed to be a kind of double team, essentially. The double team that looks like he's splitting, but the right guard's not on the same page. And the center essentially ends up having to solo that, and he just runs through that gap and makes the play. Now, it's still a very good play, but it's not quite as good as maybe it looks before you realize that the right guard really didn't do his job at all on that play,
right.
Didn't even try to do his job on that play, and Quinnen's is slightly good. So there's a couple of plays in there that maybe even on review are slightly less than you would think, and that's why he's high 80s plus whatever you're giving him for the blocked punt and not, you know, 95, right? It's not like the Warren Sapp, the reincarnation of Warren Sapp. But I don't want to focus on that part of stuff because the important thing is here is Jets fans were right. We got it wrong on this. We got it wrong. We fixed it. And now we're going to try and make sure we shore up the system so that that can't happen again. Because it can't, right? We need to be better than that. And
yeah.
We usually are.
We take this stuff seriously. Despite what... Let me just say this, too. Despite what the nonsense that Travis Kelce said, absolute spewing nonsense a few weeks back. I went there. About the agents and people paying for their grades. That's a ridiculous accusation.
Yeah.
So despite ridiculous stuff that people say out there, we take this very seriously. We take getting it as right as possible very seriously, which is why we have multiple review processes. And when we do get blowback, hey, this did look different from the eye test. Like you said, we will go back
and
review and see if we did miss something.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, we do have humans doing this and we could miss something.
Nobody likes being wrong, but we are perfectly happy to hold our hands up and say, oh, yeah, like we got this wrong when it's the case. But that's an important point, that when we get a huge volume of blowback, which happens weekly, right? That's why we're doing this segment, Explain the Grade. We get it weekly where a guy has a great game, doesn't get a good grade. It's like, what the hell? You guys are idiots. This is ridiculous. And we will do this segment where we explain why it's different. And every time we get a giant amount of blowback, we'll check those plays again. Because it's possible that we could get it wrong, you know, the way that the processes work, even with all the checks we have. And another one this week was Bills fans and Matt Milano. Matt Milano had a grade in the 40s, I think, despite being highlighted consistently on the broadcast as a big part of that defense because of the way the Bills are using him to spy Mahomes and cause problems. And it's like, well, why is Milano's grade bad? That was ridiculous.
Well, let's talk Milano. Let's do it.
So we went and we did exactly the same thing. We looked through all Matt Milano's grades. It's like, okay, well, for a start, he was getting lit up in coverage. Like, he was targeted six times, gave up six catches for 70-something yards, four of which were first downs. Early in the game, they were kind of picking on him in coverage.
Yep.
He had three missed tackles in there as well. And the plays that he was making as a quarterback spy, A, they were good, but it's this kind of thing that was getting highlighted on the broadcast. So it's like, oh, wow, Matt Milano is having an amazing game. Like, you're not highlighting the ones where he's getting picked on in coverage. It's just, that's just part of the play, you know? It's like, good play by the Bills. Good cat, you know, good first down, let's move on.
But it's
the balance of all those things. You need to count it all up to accurately factor what he was in the game.
And it goes with Milano's thing, it goes back to the linebacker issue, I think, as well, too, because fans aren't really focusing on the negatives from a linebacker. They don't see him kind of like flailing. Like, first play of the game, I think he flailed in the flat to miss a tackle, right? It just doesn't register the same way as the positives do for a linebacker. And that's the other thing, too. If a guy has a 42 grade or whatever, it doesn't mean for 50 to 60 plays he was out of position and was terrible. Like, there are good plays there as well.
Yeah.
It's just, I think you tended to ignore, the four first downs. A couple of them go behind him, right, in his coverage, where it's just like, oh, look at that. Travis Kelce's open for a 15-yarder. That's going to happen all the time. Well, he may have been the guy, you know, responsible for that particular one. So Milano is a much easier one to explain because we went through all those grades, and it's like, yeah, he got blocked in the run game a couple times. He got beaten in coverage. His good grade came as an add-on pass rusher, as you mentioned, in that spy role where he did make some big plays against Mahomes.
And which I would also say is a relatively easy responsibility, you know, as a linebacker. We talk all the time about how one of the reasons that job is so difficult in today's NFL is because they're being asked to do three or four different things on any given play, you know? And it's they're getting stretched left and right, they're getting stretched horizontally, they're getting stretched vertically, and they're being put in a catch-22 impossible situation every play. When your job is like QB spy, all that's gone. You're like, okay, just hang around in this area, and then as soon as the guy moves, go get him.
You have no coverage responsibility. The issue is you're probably, you know, in space against an athletic quarterback every now and again.
Right.
But that honestly doesn't happen often. Milano's good plays were Mahomes scrambling, compromised situation. He closes quick. He's an athletic player, and he makes a good hit on him.
But they, like, the Chiefs had throw off the plays that actually counted. The Chiefs had 20 first downs in that entire game. Four of them came into Milano's coverage, you know?
Like,
that's a pretty significant part of the bad that's happening, and that's what the grade is capturing. So anyway, my point being, when we get the blowback, we go and check these things out, and most of the time it's not going to change things because it's these types of plays, and we're like, yeah, we're happy to defend that. But the Quinn and Williams one was one where we went through and we went, no, we got it wrong. You guys are right. We're wrong. We've changed it. We've updated it. Mea culpa. And we move on.
Can we get better. Now we need, Tyler, we need a new intro that says, explain the Jets grades.
Yeah.
That's where we are.
Every week, it'll be Devin White and then the Jets player that
Devin White
that
and
we've
the Jets players.
On by mistake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there you go. Didn't even need a written statement. Well said, Sam. You were wrong.
I was wrong.
Oh, yeah. It's you.
Oh.
You take blame.
Huh.
So there we go. We got anything else here today?
So you're perfectly prepared to distance yourself from this, but legally
we're
together.
Oh, yeah. I'm like tied up in legal problems here. I could use, you know, some separation from this.
Perfect.
Get the choke again.
You're just dying?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well,
might be time to wrap it up.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is our Wednesday show. Love it. Send in your emails. We do love reading those. Send in your explain the grade questions. I also want to try to skew positive on those. I thought the Brandon Graham one was a good way to, you know, explain, hey, this guy had an impact, even though the stat sheet didn't necessarily happen.
Well, ideally,
explain the grade isn't always us defending ourselves necessarily right. from poor grades.
And ideally next week we won't be wrong. You know, that would be a great change to the explain the grade segment.
We promise to do what we can to be better.
Yeah, absolutely.
Going forward.
I mean, look,
continuous improvement,
which has been, we've said this since we started, right? The system is not perfect. It'll never be perfect. We will chase perfection, but we want to get this thing better every opportunity we can. And the positive side on this is a chance for us to review the processes as they currently stand and figure out where we can tighten it up and make sure that doesn't happen again.
Yeah, and an imperfect process is more glaring in smaller sample sizes, a.k.a.
Sure.
a game. So anyway, thanks to everybody for being a part of that, for asking us to explain the grade, and keeping us accountable. We will be back, as always, tomorrow. We at 12:30 tomorrow? Is that when we start? 12:30 live on YouTube, previewing all of the Week 7 NFL action. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow. All right, we are pleased to be joined by Nick Underhill of New Orleans Football. That's neworleans.football.com. Covers the Saints, former, you've been on the Patriots beat. You've been all over the place, right, Nick? But welcome. Welcome to the PFF NFL podcast.
Hey, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Before we get started, tell everybody where they can go get all of your Saints-related content.
Yeah, everything's on neworleans.football and Twitter, Nick_Underhill. We got podcast, YouTube, we're everywhere. You type in the name, you'll find us somewhere. Instagram, it's New Orleans Stop Football.
All right, so we've been having our guests on here on Wednesdays to preview that Thursday night football game. We have the Saints and the Cardinals. High level, what has this season been like for the Saints? Some ups and downs, some injuries, quarterback issues, and no Sean Payton. Like, what's the high level Saints season looking like so far?
It's been disappointing. And look, I don't really think it's a massive talent issue. Like, I think they should have won last week, and then they couldn't get a first down with a little more than 3 minutes left. Couldn't tackle. Tackling's been a recurring issue for this team. Fumbles have been a recurring issue for this team. Untimely penalties have been a recurring issue for this team. Clock management in week one should have cost them that game. So I just think that some of the details that they thought were going to be in place and be solid for them in this transition, staying with the familiar coaching staff and the familiar coordinators and kind of keeping everything in place, I think that there was kind of maybe a little bit of a assumption that things were going to be all good. And it's those details that have been killing them so far. So, I mean, injuries have been a big issue, but I can't go there in last week's game. Like, yeah, they didn't have Mike Thomas, Jarvis Landry, Marshawn Lattimore, and those guys matter a lot. But if you're winning for 57 minutes, 56 and a half minutes, you should be able to close out that game, and they couldn't. And I just think that they got to tighten up some of that stuff. They didn't fumble last week. The penalties were better, but the tackling's still an issue. So if they can figure that out, then they can start figuring out why their safeties aren't playing the way they want them to play, and why their interior defensive line hasn't been as good, and some of these other things. But until the big issues and the finer details, none of that stuff even really matters right now.
The Saints were one of those teams that had incredible stability for such a long time with Drew Brees and Sean Payton. How has it been different this year with no Sean Payton there for the first time in years?
I mean, just on a, you know, macro feel element, like it feels different. I mean, it feels looser, like just little things like how the media interacts with the team. Like, we're allowed to walk through hallways that are shorter to get to places now, where it used to be you had to like walk all the way around outside the building and go through like a back door to get into the locker room and stuff like that. So like some of that stuff isn't the same, but like feel wise in the locker room, I think it's a little bit different. I mean, players have talked about how just with the fumbling, like it was on Kay Adams' podcast like a week ago. Mark Ingram and Sean Payton were on there, and Mark says, hey, I know what would have happened if we fumbled when you were the coach. And, you know, they kind of joked about it. But I do think that maybe DA has taken more of a the players are going to be responsible and do what they got to do approach, whereas with Sean, it was just pressure, 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 pressure. And I don't think there's a right way or a wrong way, but I do think that maybe a little bit early on this year, some of that pressure got let out of the building. People relaxed a little bit, and they've been trying to apply it back on enough and have the right feel to where, all right, there's accountability, but we aren't going to yell at people for not having 36 markers in a bucket or, you know, some of the stuff that they used to get mad about. So it is different. You know, overall practice, how they operate looks the same, feels the same. And, you know, I'll be honest, I didn't really, outside of maybe how the guys were used in training camp, the starters didn't really practice as much, the veteran guys didn't practice as much during training camp, but it looked the same, it felt the same. It really took until like end of the season to really kind of start feeling the significant differences just in that accountability and pressure standpoint.
You mentioned the tackling, and you know, defensively, I used to always describe the Saints as their defense had championship level ability. Didn't always show it every single week, but there were some games where it's like, man, they just shut down some offenses. And overall, they made life difficult for opposing quarterbacks. And I think you haven't seen that so much this year. At times, certainly saw that at times, but down the stretch in certain games, the Vikings game, some penalties, sure. Last week against the Bengals, what is the issue with the defense, and in particular that defensive line? I think they got pressure last week against the Bengals, but it hasn't really been there for the majority of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I think starting with the interior defensive line, David Onyemata really hasn't really been the same player the last couple of years. I think he's still good. Like, he's still a good player, but there was a time probably 2-3 years ago where it looked like, I think he had a 6.5 sack season, had a ton of pressures that year, and it looked like he was going to ascend into being, you know, maybe a Grady Jarrett level type of player. And it's just went the other way since then. He got suspended, and it just hasn't been the same since then. And they don't really have that interior guy. Malcolm Roach, he's, you know, a undrafted player they acquired. He's solid, like he's fine, but there's nobody inside making that real push. And, you know, Davenport's been knocking on the door, but he hasn't been getting home. So, I mean, it's just, you know, without blitzing, the four-man front just really hasn't quite been as effective as usual. You know, the big issue with the team, it is tackling. Like, Jamar Chase, 2 missed tackles on that play, they score. There was one against Minnesota, and it would have been a tough play to make, but they run a screen and they miss a couple tackles on that play. Tyrann Mathieu kind of had a bad angle at it due to how it was blocked, but you know, he's in the realm, and when you're kind of having multiple plays, you start looking at some stuff that's on the, you know, a coin toss of criticism. You may be side towards criticizing a little bit. Explosive plays too, like they're just giving those up left and right, and that isn't really something they've done. Early 2020, when they're transitioning to Malcolm Jenkins, they had a few. The Green Bay game stands out as one where they had all kinds of busted coverages, but it's happening in like a way that's just, I don't know, it just feels different. And I think not having Marcus Williams is something that's been a significant factor for this team. Marcus May missing some time has been a big deal, and you know, just being truthful here, like I don't think Tyrann Mathieu has come in and played the way they expected him to. Now I think he could possibly turn it around, but it's been you know, a little bit underwhelming. And they have one interception the whole season. I think last year they had 18. So I mean, it's just, they aren't making plays. They just aren't as dynamic as they were before, which I think is a little bit surprising, because I thought the thought process for them, and it seemed like a deliberate decision to move away from Marcus Williams and go to Tyrann Mathieu and Marcus May. At least May for sure. And they had early interest in Mathieu, and his market had to sort out. But I think they wanted that interchangeability to be more dynamic, to not be, you know, as static, because Marcus Williams, sometimes he'd move forward and played in the box, but he was a true free safety. And I think they wanted the disguise a little bit more. And it just hasn't produced any results to this point.
We've talked about this on the podcast a bit between the two of us. So I'm curious about your take from much closer to the Saints. What is Taysom Hill? Because he's Steve Young 2.0. He's a quarterback. He's a tight end. I'm not sure he's any of those things. What is your take about what exactly Taysom Hill is at this point?
He's a guy that should be playing more than 15 snaps a game than he did last week. I think he's one of their most dynamic playmakers, and they got to find a way to get him the ball. And you know, I think when a guy's averaging, I don't know what he had last week, 8 yards per carry or something like that, he's got to get more touches. And I think that was kind of a way that they could have maybe been a little bit more dynamic in how they attacked that game down the stretch. But look, I mean, I know it's like a thing on Twitter. He's a meme, basically. But just get him the ball. Like, I don't understand the issue the Saints are kind of having with getting him involved. It's really no different than a handoff. Like, if Andy Dalton's handing off to Alvin Kamara, you're direct snapping to Taysom Hill. It's still just a running play, and everybody knows he's going to run the ball. Nobody stops it. I think getting him out of that quarterback track was obviously the right thing to do. They tried and tried and tried. And, you know, I think if we're being honest about it, they probably got him closer to being, I don't know, a passable quarterback than anybody thought they were going to. When you look at how he played at BYU, I know I wasn't someone that was like a huge believer in the ability of him getting there, but he was okay. But yeah, look, I think they got to find a way to play him, especially when you don't have a lot of firepower on offense at quarterback. I think you got to be creative, and he's a guy that they should be more creative with than they have been. I thought it was a pretty good balance against Seattle. Maybe that's at the higher end, but I thought they got too far away from it this week.
Is there any reason they can't just say, all right, you're a running back now, and you're going to be the power back? You know, it feels like they get too caught up in the idea of, well, you can't have that many direct handoff runs from a quarterback. It's kind of crazy. It's too gimmicky. It's, you know, you get lost in the sauce there, whereas really, if you just said the reality of this thing, which is he's our power running game, line him up a tailback, like, you can do as many times as you want in that scenario.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that I've really not understood. I mean, he's one of their best players. Just give one of your best players the ball. Like, he's not in the quarterback room anymore. He was, I think, the last couple of weeks, just because I had injuries and if something happened. But like, he practices with the tight ends. I agree with you. I feel like he should be with the running backs. I think that's where he kind of belongs. That's where he has his most value. I don't even know if they've thrown him a pass this year, maybe one. So, I mean, that's not even something they're really doing. He is a good blocker. So I understand kind of getting him in some of those situations as well. But I would kind of focus it more on, okay, you're going to be a running back. Let's figure some of this stuff out. And how are all the different multitude of ways that we can use you?
Yeah, and I don't know how you felt at the time, but when they were bringing Taysom in the red zone when Drew Brees was still on the team, it felt like, yeah, Drew Brees doesn't throw the ball down the field as well as he used to, but man, like, it's still Drew Brees. Like, I want that guy making right. My red zone decisions. It felt like it was forced. When you have a Jameis or an Andy Dalton at quarterback, it feels like, yeah, absolutely, we're going to give 10 to 15 snaps to Taysom Hill, whether it is as a pure runner or gimmicky stuff or whatever it is. So it does feel like the door should be open for more Taysom Hill. Not that it's all going to look like the Seattle game necessarily.
Right.
I want to ask about the rookies too, the first rounders in particular. Chris Olave, of course. Trevor Penning's been hurt. Looks like he's on his way potentially to come back. What have you seen from Olave when he's been healthy, and he should be back Thursday, right? And Trevor Penning back in the preseason.
Yeah, he'll play. I think Olave's been incredible. I think he's probably even been a little bit better than I expected. And I had high expectations. Like, he's done a lot better on contested catches than I thought he was going to do. Man, he got knocked out on one the last time he played and scored a touchdown. And there's been a few others. So he's been really good. The route running is incredible. He's just kind of always open. He's easy to read. And just the way he moves and just puts himself in good positions to make plays is been something that stands out. Broken plays, he knows how to scramble and make himself friendly to the quarterback. He just feels mature in how he approaches the game, and it stood out early, and I think he's just going to keep getting better and better for them. Penning's in a walking boot right now. That's coming off next week. He's going to start testing it out. So I think that November timeline that was reported when he got hurt is probably something that's realistic. Now, whether he plays quickly or not, I think that's a major question. He was getting better during camp. I thought every time we saw him play, he improved. You'd see him do something wrong, and then quickly it'd get fixed. So the growth was happening rapidly, but taking him off the field, I don't know how that's going to affect him. And James Hurst has been okay there. I don't think they're, you know, thriving or necessarily dying with him at that position, even though he did give up the last pressure to Trey Hendrickson. That kind of cost him the game last week. But yeah, I don't think they're going to force it too early with him, but he is someone that I think in time should be good. I mean, the progress was good, and that was kind of the thing with him is just how far he had to go. So if he can keep doing that long term, it's someone that's probably going to be a good starter for them. The problem is with both these guys, you could say they traded five picks for Olave, or you could look at the situation and say, well, they could have traded their other first round pick and not taken Penning. If they don't win enough games, one of these guys is going to kind of, it's going to be a tough draft class for them to reconcile, given that they gave away next year's first round pick and they might not have a quarterback and they might be picking pretty high if they don't turn things around.
Rapsheet had a tweet today that started, it seems the entire Saints team is banged up. How do you see that affecting Thursday night against the Cardinals?
It's going to be Kevin White on the field some, you know, that's how it affects it. I mean, that's just kind of where they're at. Marquez Callaway, you know, it's a tough offense. Last year, it was the same thing. At least they're adding back Olave, who I think is their wide receiver one right now, just based on production. I mean, I don't even think that's a controversial statement. But yeah, it's something they're going to have to try to figure out and how to overcome. I think it's going to be another really, really run-heavy approach. I'm going to go back to what we were just saying about Taysom. It feels like a game where he should get a lot of touches Thursday night, roll him out there. There's not a whole lot of scheming and game planning. Let him, you know, everybody knows he's going to run the ball, see if somebody can stop it. And until they do, keep doing it. That's how I would approach the game. And yeah, I mean, I just think they got to try to find a way to get over it. Because if they lose this game, I mean, realistically, they aren't going to have a lot more games after this that matter. Like, their season's on the brink. This one goes sideways. It's very quickly the season's going in a spiral.
What do you make of Arizona so far from afar? You've got Kyler, his contract, Call of Duty discussion, all sorts of fun there. But an offense, they get DeAndre Hopkins back, but an offense that just has not been explosive whatsoever. So what do you know about Arizona and how they're going to match up with the Saints here on Thursday?
Yeah, I haven't seen a ton of them. I would usually spend like today watching the other team, and we're on our way out to practice. So I'm not super familiar with what they're doing. But look, I think the Saints defense right now is a team that if you're having trouble on offense, it's probably a game where you're looking at it and thinking that you can create some advantages. I mean, Marshawn Lattimore is going to be out. I'm guessing right now, before we see the last practice of the week, I think it's probably going to be Paulson Adebo, who has... Man, I was just looking on your guys' website. I think it was like a 152 passer rating against right now.
Yeah.
And Alante Taylor, who's played like six snaps, is probably going to be the other outside cornerback. We don't know a lot about him. He looked good in camp. Didn't play in the preseason because he had a hip pointer, and then he got an MCL sprain during the season. So this will probably be his first NFL action if they actually roll forward with him at that position. They haven't been great defending the slot the whole season since trading C.J. Gardner-Johnson. Last week it was Chris Harris, and the Broncos went 9-for-9 against him, throwing at him in the slot. So they've just had a lot of issues covering, and this is a team that has a lot of weapons. And if you're looking for, you know, a matchup to potentially get right, it's, you know, there's a lot of opportunity here, I think. You know, I do think the Saints can clamp it down. I think Adebo is a lot better than he's played, but yeah, the secondary has really kind of underachieved at this point, and not having Lattimore, I think, is a huge issue, especially in a Thursday night game where, you know, that would be the one thing you could do. Hey, I'm going to drop him on somebody and that guy's going to get a race, and then we can worry about everybody else. And they don't have that advantage this week.
Well, Arizona was supposed to have, they were supposed to have a get right game last week against Seattle, and they struggled offensively. Yeah. So this could be a get right game for the Saints defense or for the Saints offense as well. The Cardinals last in PFF coverage grade right now as a team. So the Saints might have some pass game opportunities here. So you want to get to the pick, Sam?
Yeah, so we've been asking our guests previewing the Thursday night game to just give us where their pick's going. Right now, the Cardinals are 2.5-point favorites. That sort of tells you, I think, how banged up the Saints are going into this game, because neither of these teams looks incredible right now. What kind of score do you think this game is going to be? Who's going to end up winning?
If the Saints can score like 23 points, I think they should find a way to win. I would have said that last week too. The crazy thing with them right now is I think they're like tied with the Chiefs in yards per game, which I don't know how much that means. They've been in a lot of fourth quarter hurry up situations, a lot of garbage yards in that, but they're not scoring a lot of points. Their red zone offense has been kind of bad, 1-for-5 last week. I think they're going to figure out a couple of those things. I think they're going to find a way to move the ball. I think they should be able to run. I'm going to reluctantly pick the Saints in like a 23-20 game. Like, I don't know, like they've stopped shooting themselves in the foot enough that I think that maybe they can overcome some of their internal issues. And you know, it's a desperation game for them too, so I think that matters a lot as well. And last week it kind of had the same feel. They came out, they played hard, so I don't think they're in a point yet where they're kind of, you know, feeling weird about where they're at in the locker room, sliding. Like, I think they're still in a decent place. So I think they're going to find a way to win this one.
Sam, how about you? We got Arizona favored by 2.5 here.
I like the Cardinals. I would be a lot more worried about it if Marshawn Lattimore was fully healthy and you could potentially put him on Nuke Hopkins in his first game back, because that's exactly the kind of receiver that Lattimore does really well against. But without him, I think the Cardinals end up getting this done.
I know Nick picked the Saints here, but like everything else that we talked about here has me leaning Cardinals, in part because of the injuries, right? And because I do think what's missing for the Cardinals is Nuke Hopkins, is some sort of big playability on the outside. But, man, I'm torn here. I'm going to go. I think I'm going full opposites on everything this week, though, since I'm having such a bad year.
Yeah.
So I'm taking the Saints.
Okay.
I would have taken the Cardinals. I'm taking the Saints to cover the 2.5. New Orleans.football. That's where everybody can get all their good stuff. If you're a Saints fan, you have to go to New Orleans.football. Tell them all about it, Nick.
Yeah, it's a lot of analysis. You know, we get into the details. We just hired Mike Triplett from ESPN. So if you the Saints, we like to think that we got a nice little package of analysis and everything. And you can sign up $9 a month and get everything that we're doing on the team.
If you're a Saints fan, go check it out right now. They're wooing people from ESPN, NewOrleans.football. thanks, Nick. Really appreciate it. And I'll have to do it again sometime.
Yeah, appreciate you guys.
Thanks.